One of the measures that has been a big measure for both the House and Senate, they've each had their own versions go through, and the House version has been the one that's come through the Senate now, and that's for the prescription drug monitoring program.
We took that up on Thursday afternoon. Normally, we're able to adjourn before too late on Thursday, so we have all time to get back into our districts for Friday and the weekend and any kind of engagements that we have there. But I think the floor leader felt like that the conflicts on that bill had been largely worked out and resolved, and the compromises had already been made. I think he was probably surprised when that did not turn out to be the case. I don't think he realized just how many of us really didn't like the idea of the PDMP and the conflicts that it created, as well as the lack of evidence of its success. So we were here fairly late on Thursday, but did finally get to the perfection of that piece of legislation, and it has been now sent to conference. It's in a conference committee where they're trying to resolve the difference between the House version and the Senate version. I voted no on the bill. I didn't have a lot to say because a lot had already been said. I am disappointed. That's one of those issues that comes along, I think, very rarely, where you have a fairly significant piece of legislation that, in my opinion, has a significant impact on individual privacy rights and individual liberty, and yet has virtually no record of success. The one reason that is so significant is that 49 other states have passed similar measures. They do have prescription drug monitoring programs. They have been following those to some measure, and yet there's been virtually no impact, no positive impact in terms of the drug-related deaths, or overall, even the opioid-related deaths, even the prescription drugs. And when I look at that and say, why would we invade people's privacy? Why would we compromise some of their freedoms and protection of their personal information without any evidence that there will be a positive result for the general population? That has been the most frustrating thing for me. When you look at what's happened in the state that have implemented similar programs from 2000 to 2015, we've seen an increase in drug-related deaths of almost four times. And during that time, you went from no prescription drug monitoring programs to 49 of them. One of the other things is Missouri has the only state that does not have a PDMP, and that's been the driving force for us getting one. The logic to promote this bill has not been because of its success. It has not been because it's reduced deaths. It's been because we're the only state that doesn't do it. And you would think that that would mean we would have the most prolific drug deaths, opioid-related certainly, of any of the states. There are 21 states with PDMPs who have more opioid-related deaths per capita than we do. 21 of them. And yet, we had to have this. We had to impose this upon the people of Missouri. I think it's unconstitutional. I think it's ineffective. I do think that one of the reasons it is so ineffective is if you talk to people who have studied this issue, they will generally tell you that the amount of opioids that are acquired by doctor shopping, prescription shopping, is about 3%. So about 3% of the problem comes from what this legislation is designed to stop. So if every doctor in Missouri practiced it, you might address 3% of that. I'm not sure you even see that result, because that's the maximum. That says you're not going to get more than a 3% impact. You're probably going to get less. That's why it's always been statistically insignificant in terms of the differences after a state passed PDMP. In talking to our current director of DHSS, the Department of Health and Senior Services, he told me that approximately 23% of the doctors in North Carolina actually use the program. Now, the bill that left the Senate requires every doctor to use it. I don't know whether that survives the conference committee or not, but the bill that left the Senate did require every doctor. But in North Carolina, about 23% of the doctors use it. About 3% of the drugs are related to doctor shopping, which gives you less than 1% of impact on the total problem. If in Missouri we have 100% participation, if all the doctors follow the law, if the law survives and all the doctors follow it, then we might get a 3% impact or something less than that. And yet the passion that this had to be passed, that the people of Missouri have to be subjected to this, was almost beyond imagination. I am frustrated with it. We do have a process in the Senate, and it's also available to the House. It's in the Constitution, Article 3, Section 30, that allows any member of the legislature legislature to file a formal objection to any bill that is passed, advising the governor of our opposition to it. I do plan to file one of those if PDMP is truly agreed and finally passed. I have some colleagues I think will probably join me in that, but I just believe this is one of those areas where we have done something to the people of Missouri for which there is no documented justification. And I hate that we're doing it.
One bill passed this week is House Bill 339, which I believe is yet another tort reform measure.
That's right. And it's a pretty significant issue. It's kind of a rare problem, but it's a very costly problem. And it's two items that kind of go together. We actually have passed the two sections individually, but they were put together in the House bill, in the committee substitute for the House bill. And one of those is called reservation of rights. The other one is time-limited demand. I don't want to get into the legalities of those. It really is kind of a complicated issue. But what has happened is the trial attorneys have discovered that the plaintiff's attorneys have discovered that there are certain agreements that they can work out in a personal injury case, and that those agreements, if they work them right, can actually remove the defendant from the court proceeding, where if you're the one who is being charged with some personal injury offense, that you've caused some accident or injury, that the plaintiff and the judge can get together virtually behind closed doors without the liable party in the room and can work out what a settlement should be. And then you, maybe it's an insurance company, maybe it's an individual, you suddenly get a letter in the mail that says a judgment has been entered against you. You have a certain amount of time to settle that judgment, and you have not even known it before then. It doesn't happen frequently, but when it does happen, the level of settlement is almost astronomical. It might be a personal injury case, which if it was adjudicated properly would result in, let's just use the numbers, $50,000 of award maybe to the injured party. With the use of this virtually a conspiracy, that award might become $1 million or $2 million. You might have indemnified a person for $100,000 in this particular area, and you suddenly get a judgment in the mail for $2 million. And so you can imagine what that does to every other customer of that insurance company, because that has to be distributed among the ratepayers. And so every ratepayer is harmed significantly by these, even though they don't happen every day. When they do happen, they're astronomical in their damage and awards. And as a result, the premiums will go up.